The Future Commerce print shop is now open for business. Shop.futurecommerce.com has all of our merch, including our brand new journal, Muses, which is out now from Future Commerce Press. You can find 150 pages of ancient inspiration and divine innovation in our annual journal. And you'll get that at the Future Commerce print shop. While you're there, pick up a tote bag and maybe some postcards and a bunch of t-shirts from both Archetypes and the Muses releases. Get it all today and save 15% when you use your Future Commerce Plus membership. See around the next corner and look good while you do it with your new tote and t-shirt from the Future Commerce print shop. Save 15% with our membership when you shop at shop.futurecommerce.com. That's shop.futurecommerce.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by GroupBuy. You can transform your customers' e-commerce experience with GroupBuy's new product discovery platform, which is powered by Google Cloud Retail AI. Stay tuned for more on how GroupBuy and Google are revolutionizing e-commerce search and recommendations later on in the show. This episode of Future Commerce is brought to you by Wix. That's right, Wix. The industry-leading content management platform is now also an industry-leading e-commerce platform with advanced online storefront features and over 700,000 active stores already selling worldwide. Find out if Wix is right for you by going to wix.com/e-commerce today. That's Wix, wix.com/e-commerce, or listen to the middle of the show to find out more about how they can transform your business. Hey, has anyone told you today that you look gorgeous? Well, if not, now they have. Future Commerce is brought to you by Gorgeous, which is the number one e-commerce help desk for Shopify, Magento, and BigCommerce brands. With Gorgeous, you can automate up to 20% of your commonly asked questions and put it seamlessly into your existing tech stack. Go to gorgeous.com/futurecommerce for 2 months free. That's GORGIAS.com/futurecommerce for 2 months free. Hello, and welcome to Future Commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian. Where are we going with this?
This is late night, so we're doing... This is after dark. Future Commerce after dark.
We haven't done after dark that way before.
We haven't. Dark. We're going to have dark. Some... Chris, set the mood music. There's some like really nice saxophone going in the background right now. We have a great show for you coming up. We got Roland Gossage, who's going to join us in a little bit and kind of demystify the everything you need to know about like the modernity of site search. And here's somebody who spent early career at Endeca and is now building GroupBuy and a bunch of a whole suite of customer engagement tools around that platform. And they've been a great partner of ours here, but he'll be on the show a little bit later to break that down. In the meantime, we're breaking down how to pronounce. How do you say it, Brian?
Well, I've heard a couple different things, but according to complex.
We've gone down the rabbit hole already. According to complex,
it is Emily Andor.
There it is. It's my ex-girlfriend, Emily.
On door.
If you put her on the door. It's
Emily Andor.
We were in New York last week, and you braved the hour-long wait that it took to get into the shop. And how was it, the actual physical retail experience for the famed brand ALD or Emily Andor?
It was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. There was a wait. There was a wait in New York. It was consistently probably a 30-minute wait, maybe more. I think they were limiting the number of people that could be in the store due to COVID. And they also have a cafe in the store. So I think
people are hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do this. Good. The good, the bad, the ugly.
Okay. The good was the product is phenomenal. It's well displayed. It was front and center, as it should be. It was collection. It was more like sample items in the store. It wasn't like what you see on the rack wasn't their stock. It was just like, then they go back and get it for you. Mm-hmm. Which was smart. You can really merchandise the store well. The exterior of the store. So sticking with the good, actually, the cafe was nice. I got a flat white. It was, quite nice. I thought it was good.
Nice.
Yes.
That's good.
I mean, it wasn't as good as the flat white I got at Culture with you earlier that day.
That was three. You were on a string of coffees that day.
And then I went to the Nespresso shop after that.
I was so mad. I was so mad because I wanted so badly to get coffee right there, but my Lyft had pulled up and I needed to get to the airport. I got to Newark. So anybody who understands New York travel, I made it from 38th and 8th to Newark in like 21 minutes.
That's right? Ridiculous. I've never heard of
it. I have the texts to prove it. I feel like Will Smith, except for I was there. Will Smith in that movie with the zombie vampires.
The
only other person to experience New York with less traffic than I had in I Am Legend. I had an I Am Legend experience getting to the airport. But anyway, I really wanted to go to Culture and get that and get a drink there. They had this really awesome tote bag. And this is something I've like noticed more and more. Michael Miraflor is consistently on Twitter geeking out about tote bags, and so now I noticed them. And Culture had this really cool tote bag, and I was going to pick one up, but then I had to go. And then you took off, and you went to this great retail experience. So the merchandising of the store, Emily Ondor, great.
It was good. Yeah, it was good. It was great. The store itself,
the coffee was good.
Coffee was good. Store itself wasn't anything particularly special, in my opinion. I've been in a lot of retail experiences that are well merchandised.
Well, we're gonna contrast it against one we both went into the day before. So okay.
We'll talk about it in a second. We'll talk about that in a second. But so it wasn't like it was like particularly incredible. It was good. It was well done, and the products are phenomenal. And
You get the hype now.
I get the hype. Yeah, the hype is good. The wait in line, I said it was a 30-minute wait, so that was probably, you know, I wouldn't call that the bad. That's more of the ugly. And I guess that's part of the experience, though, is like, you know, being in line.
Well, you just skipped a thing.
I know.
You just skipped a thing. Okay. So you did the good. That's the only good?
Yeah.
Okay, so the good is...
The good is the product. The good is the way it's merchandise. The good is, you know, the service was good. You know, people were very attentive. Someone came and asked me, you know, if I wanted to, you know, if this was, you know, if I wanted that in a large or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. it was a well-serviced, well-run, well-merchandised store with great product. There you go.
Nice. Was there a Porsche 911 signature edition parked anywhere inside the store?
I didn't see one. It was very small. It was a very small store. The merchandise was sort of around the side by collection, and there were like hats displayed on top of the collections and some of the like...
Yeah, they're big on hats.
Shelving between. I'm not a hat guy. I've got a huge head. So.
Neither am I.
Yeah, well, you've got the hair. Yeah, you've got the hair. Yeah. So
you've got some hair too, brother.
I got some. Right now, I've got some hair. Let me tell you.
not pictured. He's got a little bit of a truffula tree kind of a look going on. Lorax inspired.
When I don't put anything in my hair, I look like a little bit of a marshmallow.
I love it. So, it's sort of collection based in the store. You're kind of getting a good sense of the whole current collection, like the whole season, right? And yeah, okay. Is there? Yeah. There's a try on. They have a They have a dressing room and all that.
You know, actually, I didn't even try anything on. I just grabbed my size and I ran. I ran away. Oh. I got a pretty, pretty dope shirt.
Channeling a little Larry David there. Okay.
It was a good all right. shirt.
So what's the bad and the ugly? The bad was the weight, you said.
Yeah, the weight. But I mean, I guess that's kind of part of the experience. So I won't mark that as a huge notch against it.
I would say it's a reasonable weight considering Mad Happy opened today or yesterday in Soho and had an hour and a half wait, 100 plus people in line.
Yeah, ALD, I mean, ALD's been open for a little bit longer. I bet you the wait was longer when they first opened.
That's probably true.
But the fact that they kept a consistent, you know, half an hour, 40-minute wait is actually pretty impressive. Like, yeah. It never got shorter. Interesting observation about line, it was about 70% male. Very scientific count.
Very large sample size. Yeah.
And I also laughed when a mom and her two boys got in line behind me in Kith. They were dressed to the hilt in Kith. And Jordans. That was kind of funny, but
kind of fit the bill.
Did fit the bill. I had people
walking for you,
calling out people in line, like, "Where'd you get that? What, like, when did that drop?" Yeah, this was true. Like, it was very much hype culture.
It's a scene.
It's a total scene.
And the ugly, the store design is completely ruined by scaffolding right now.
The facade was a little like meh. There were some
worth
like
the hype. Worth an $85 t-shirt ticket?
According to Macklemore, no. But according to me, actually, I really like the shirt that I got.
I'm shocked. I'm very, very shocked at you that you like this. All right.
I showed you the shirt I got. It's cool, right?
It's so cool. Yeah, okay. We'll post a picture of it up somewhere. Actually, you know what? We'll put it up on our Twitter. We'll link it here in the show notes.
All I need to do now is buy some of their cords, get some hype Nikes and wear the Kanye puffer jacket and have completely ensemble.
Actually, I disagree a little bit. I feel like what you need is you need the Salehe Bumberry Water Be the Guide New Balance. That's what you need.
The New Balance.
And then you need an Alex Mill canvas worker jacket. That's what you need, that with the cords and that t-shirt. It's like a whole look.
Yeah, it's anyway, a whole look.
Future commerce is we're this is like we're so off the rails.
The cords were looking hot. I'm like in on the cords.
I'm down with cords coming back.
Corduroy pants are not an all the time thing, but when they're on, they're on.
Let's contrast that with the experience. We went to the Shinola. I don't know if it's their flagship. I'm going to guess their flagship is not necessarily in New York City. It's probably in Detroit. But we went to the Shinola store together. We were there.
Yeah.
Also in the same week. Just this past week, I had never been into a physical retail Shinola experience before. I have seen their products in the real world. Much more impressive seeing them A, all together, and B, in a nicely designed store. It was a pretty awesome retail experience. Would you say the Shinola store is much bigger than ALD?
Yes.
Oh yeah, by like orders of magnitude.
Yes, it's a lot bigger. Remember that front area of the Shinola store?
Like, yeah, if you got rid of kind of like building all the section
counters and stuff.
Yeah.
That's closer to the size of ALD.
No way. Oh, it's that's small.
It's okay. Small, man. I'm telling you.
Do you remember a couple years ago when I was complaining about Koyo on Abbot Kinney and Koyo had this, like, there was literally nowhere to sit down to put on shoes?
On the Shinola train, like, I think their shop was better merchandised, actually.
I mean, they have more to merchandise for sure.
They do. Well, and they have all the bikes and like, you know, up above.
They've got everything. What's really impressive to me is the way that they've branched out over the years. You know, I mean, they didn't have much apparel. They didn't have much in the way of apparel. And I feel like I think of Shinola as being much more into apparel than hard goods these days. Or maybe that was a prior collection in year or two past.
Well, they acquired Filson a while back or whatever, or however that happens. And Filson's a lot more apparel focused. And I love Filson, actually. Talk about incredible merchandising and like in, you know, interior.
That company is on a whole other level. We might have done a cross post. There was a merchant to merchant episode live at Filson that we did a few years ago, but I don't know if we went into depths about the actual makeup of the store. But getting back to Shinola,
yeah,
I thought that that was an exceptional experience. I think watching them, we did not do the watch building, but we sort of walked by that whole watch building timepiece sort of like assembly section where you can like choose a band and you choose.
It's really
like,
cool.
It's really, really, really well done. And home goods too, really flexing on the home goods. There's a lot for office, which feels like that might be fairly new given that everybody's working from home and probably tricking out their home office a lot. A lot of like larger timepieces that you might like have for display in your office. Really got the sense of, oh, wow, gosh, there's so much I could really do here from like a styling aesthetic perspective. You almost bought a candle, which blew my mind.
I mean, you could say I almost bought a candle, but I didn't really get that close to buying the candle.
You smelled the
but
candle.
But I did like that candle a lot. The grass one was like grass, zero, musk,
number one.
And rain, which is very, very Seattle.
Yeah, very, very, very Seattle, and not very Detroit, which would be like motor oil and, you know, crushing poverty. But
it's so funny. I feel like Filson like influenced Shinola at some point, and now they just like
potentially.
Yeah,
retail in-store experiences, man. I'll tell you, having not experienced these brands in person until very recently, my sense of what they are and what they can be is so much more heightened having been in the physical, which says, which is stupid. I know that. You know that. Anyone listening to this show knows that. But it's kind of an incredible and magical experience when you have that realization of like, well, Shinola was on our list last year of 9x9, right?
Yeah, they were. I believe they were.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was Filson, one of the two. But yeah, no, it's interesting that you say this. It's funny because like I was talking to some, I met somebody when I was in New York, and she was saying that like she flew into LaGuardia and she's like,
yeah,
yes, I'm back. This is amazing. LaGuardia. And I'm like, sign of the times. Like we're getting in back to physical retail, and it's like so cool because we haven't touched it in so long. And so or at least, you know, beyond our Costco's and grocery stores and, you know, and the places that we all frequent in our local communities.
Yeah, it's true. It's super true. Well, Shinola actually made number four on our list of local heroes last year in our very first inaugural 9x9. Before we bounce, any last words on physical retail experiences, Brian?
Yeah, I had so much coffee in New York while I was there, and it was like coffee shops are so awesome. It just felt so good. I went to the Nespresso store. Talk about like physical retail experience. Yeah,
that is an immersive experience.
That was incredible. Like the way that they've display all their boxes of Nespresso is actually really cool. And then they've got their little cafe. All in all, I love New York. I love physical retail. It's good to be back. I had so much fun with you on that trip, and I think it was just awesome to be out and about and doing things.
I concur. And the physical store openings, I mean, they just kind of keep rolling on. Scotch and Soda is, you know, according to Retail Dive, is opening 22 new brick and mortar locations, which is just
incredible. I walked out past one of them when I was walking from the train over to ALD.
Yeah, they're sort of popping up everywhere now. It's a brand also that I kind of fell in love with a few years ago after having walked into a physical retail store. I find that to be really, really, really interesting. You know, Amazon is making its footprint a little wider these days. They're going to be building, Amazon department stores now. There's a lot happening. I just, and in other news,
I think Home Goods, was it, just launched e-commerce for the first time.
Heyo, Home Goods.
Yes, yeah, digital to physical, physical to digital. It's all back in swing. I feel like you could have recorded this, many years ago.
2019. That's so true.
Very much. Yeah, very, very relevant. Actually, 2019, we would have been talking about retail apocalypse. Which is funny because that's less relevant now than it's ever been.
Yeah, okay. I feel like that's a really good point to end on. Retail apocalypse, no longer relevant. It's actually the opposite. We're seeing store openings now. And it's not to say that there isn't still physical retail that's going under and, you know, brands that are dying. But nobody cares. I think the part that's exciting is that stuff is opening. Things are popping. There's cool retail experiences now. Finally, we can stop talking about old brands that are dying and talk about new brands that are thriving. Let's do that in 2022. I'm looking forward to next year and seeing what comes about, because I think it's going to be pretty cool.
I agree. We went a little long in this segment, but we know there's so much more for future commerce to come. After the break, we'll be joined by Roland Gossage of GroupBuy. Please stick around. It's a wonderful conversation that ties the age-old practice of designing the language of the web and how the old world and the things we learned from the way that we did site search and the visual language of the web was developed, how that's playing into today and how we're doing that today all over again, and how retailers can expect to adapt to the coming changes here. All right, that's it. Roland Gossage up after the break.
Hello, and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip. Today we have a great partner organization, and we're thankful so much for the support of GroupBuy here this year in 2021. But we're just delighted to have the CEO of GroupBuy, Roland Gossage, joining us on the show today. Welcome, Roland.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
And we're going to cover some serious ground here. This is the kind of conversation that I geek out over, because I've been in the e-commerce space for a long, long time. Long before the platform revolution, long before the SaaS and cloudification of e-commerce, and long before the DTC era, back in the day, and this is, where everybody rolls their eyes, and I have to be like, well, back in my day, you had to build this crap from scratch. And Roland, I take it you've been in this industry for a little while too. You spent some time in Endeca. You have some battle scars in the world of commerce, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. We've come a long way, obviously, in early 2000s, when really just after the dot-com bubble and all that, and really e-commerce was coming into its sort of first wave of technology. And like you said, most of the stuff was hand-built. There was a lot of homegrown. Obviously, the emergence of the first rounds of companies like Endeca, which pioneered things like that left-hand or faceted navigation. Yep. We were in the sort of early throes of tackling this very hard to solve problem of creating, an online experience that was easy to use, cradle to grave, hit the site to check out in a cohesive manner, especially in those days.
And now fast forward 10, 20 years, and we have GroupBuy, which is, like next level. Tell us a little bit about how things have evolved over these past 20 years since the dot-com bubble.
Yeah, so it's interesting, and Endeca was a great company. It was a bunch of Harvard and MIT think tank turned into company. It's a reason why I joined, a great set of people, and we created huge innovations that didn't exist before, and merging navigation and search and merchandising, and really trying to anticipate how the user want to interact with the catalog and the information on the site. A lot of this, again, the early days was all on-premise, right? So this was, bare metal, right? Rack servers, all that sort of stuff. And there was a lot of architecture built in to make sure they scaled. Back then, when Black Friday and Cyber Monday, it was a white knuckle time of year for people. Obviously, fast forward, the move to the cloud, which we know is a ongoing process. There are still a lot of retailers that we come across that are either in the transition or thinking about it still. And there's a lot that are fully in the cloud now, right? They're the early adopters and moved rather quickly. And the cloud has changed the way the systems themselves work, right? In what an e-commerce team, an IT team, and the chief, now the rise of the chief digital officer, which happened in, you know, probably the last 6 or 7 years, have to worry about. But the game's changed, right? The bar has been increased so much so now where everybody expects that Google-like or that Amazon-like experience on any site they hit. And if you look at the statistics, is that 80% of clients who hit a website that have a poor user experience are likely to never return, right? So the stakes are even higher, but we have a lot more tools at our disposal. The technology's come a long way to create those new experiences for users.
You know, that's a really good point. Like back in the day, if you hit a website that wasn't great, like a lot of stuff wasn't great. And so it was a little bit less like, it was a little bit less scary. Now, if you hit a website that with a poor experience, you're like, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into?
And the rise of social and things like even Reddit, the abuse that these brands get, and the exposure when there's a bad experience, like it hits the board. Before it was like e-commerce wasn't even part of marketing, right? They were started as like a little sort of appendage, as I called them back in the day. Obviously, we've started to integrate them because it's a holistic part of marketing. But yeah, it was, everybody was kind of, you know, using the same worn out tools to try to do things. But nowadays, obviously, there are definite differences between the top of the food chain and the very bottom.
There's a unbundling of, you know, the feature set of Amazon that's kind of happening in e-commerce SaaS over the last few years, is that we have all of these experiences that, like you said, Roland, there's an expectation from a consumer of, well, why can't I just have rich search, or why can't I just have, you know, the layered navigation? These are all things that it's interesting. Every e-commerce platform solves for in some way, but they also solve it poorly. Is that, can I say it that way? I don't know if that's giving them enough credit, but yeah, you know, there's a reason why, you know, these third-party tools can exist, and so many of them, because there's a lot of choices out there right now, right? In the way that you might solve site search if you're an e-commerce brand.
And there's different challenges based on size, scale, complexity, sure, of the data, completeness of the data, that also factors into it. So there's a layers, right? So there's the Shopify big commerce sort of thing. I have a handful of products, or maybe 1,000 products. I do transactions in a year in the millions of dollars. And then you've got the large ones, which are doing, you know, 100 million, 50 million, you know, billion, and even 3 billion, 4 billion online. We have very different problems. And obviously, we've also seen the rise of the marketplace. Obviously, Amazon kind of started that. Others have realized, to stay competitive, that they need to use their endless aisle to truly be endless, which enters a whole new complexity when you get to size and scale, where you're doing, you know, some of the sites that we power might see in a single second 8,000 search queries per second. And solving that at scale when you have millions of products and making sure that every search is relevant is actually quite difficult. Right. Amazon, who everybody talks about, has thousands of developers working on search. Most retailers can't put that kind of horsepower behind it, which is also why they turn to, you know, partners like ourselves to help them with that problem. That includes also the platform plays, because they know that they have to build sort of an end to end, but help and allow an ecosystem to do some best of breed as well, which we also see in the market.
If I saw this. It's complete bunny trail here, but I saw a TikTok recently where there's someone who's like, "Yeah, no, I'm a product manager at Google." "Oh yeah, what product?" It's actually the apps, the Google apps, like a button on your Gmail. It's like the 9 little dots that you click on in like a square, and then it like shows you all the apps, and it's like, "Oh, that's cool. What does a product manager over that do?" Well, actually, technically, I'm a product manager for the like top leftmost dot of the 9 dots. And it's like, that's the kind of team poking fun at the fact that these are thousands of people that work on these types of products. you know, that's, I think that's kind of funny. But I would assume that, you know, a company like yourself who's, you know, building a digital product has a very similar structure, probably of a different size, right? A different scale. But you've got a bunch of different products in your search suite, and you're probably thinking intensely about how you can solve small challenges on, you know, every part of it so that an e-commerce merchant doesn't have to.
Yeah, actually, you're in several different places that, you know, kind of even beyond search, like you're sort of addressing a number of different ecosystems. What kind of, which ecosystems are you in, and what challenges are you seeing in those, you know, those systems right now?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting when we look at the two primary markets are the B2C market. So think about the Bed Baths and Beyonds of the world, you know, the Cabela's, that sort of size, the brands that we're all used to, right, the direct consumer brands. But we also operate in the B2B side, which, although it seems like it's a similar problem, is actually very, very difficult because they have custom contracts, custom pricing, a whole bunch of other things, punch out. Which is where ERP systems connect directly to the e-com system. So they buy through their SAP system, but find it on the website first. So there's complexities there. So that's your industrial supply chain, your large manufacturing. So manufacturing to business and manufacturing to consumer companies. And we realize that to solve both of those, they still want to put the right product in front of the right user at the right moment. But each has unique challenges in how they look at that. And then, of course, on the B2C side, you have things like marketplace, where they have data that's coming from other suppliers that they're not in control of that we have to deal with as well. And so in both of these, you know, since we're all aging ourselves and whatnot, is the old analogy was garbage in, garbage out. And that still exists today. So we realized up front that we had to solve the data problem first. So we had to create the golden record. And we also knew that there was supplier information, there was marketplace information that was coming through. First of all, we had to get it all together and then join it into this golden record. The other thing too is there's a lot of data that's sometimes missing, where there, you know, we get some records, believe it or not, that have a title, a brand, and a price, and that's it. So that's not a lot for even the greatest search engine to go against. And so what we built was both an ETL level, so an extract, transform, and load, where we can push and pull information from our clients' ecosystems, pull it into a single structure, and then augment and then put the voice of the customer onto that record. So we capture all the user behavior data and how people are looking for that and have an enrichment process that then puts that in there. So if someone searches on Google for a little black dress, great for a first date, we actually have all the metadata in the system so that your SEO works, so that that search, if they did it on site, would also work, and that your SEO is being indexed in Google for that kind of search. And then, of course, once it's in it, you have to have a superior user journey, right? So that's supporting that search as you type, or the predictive search that's sort of anticipating per keystroke what you're looking for. Navigation, the mega nav, and then, of course, the search results page. But we go right down to the shopping cart, right? Because we want to do cross-sell, upsell, so that we can increase your average order value. And you have to do it with one-to-one personalization, right? So that's why this challenge becomes pretty unique. But then you have to have an ecosystem. That's why we call it a product discovery platform is kind of how we refer to it. I know a lot of people still use the word search, but it's a little bit more than that. Search is, of course, the hardest piece to solve, because as soon as you get humans using freeform, you know, you'd be surprised, six different users looking for the same product do six different searches.
Yeah.
Or you could have six users putting the same search in, but each expect a different product.
Future Commerce is brought to you by GroupBy. Did you know that GroupBy is a product discovery platform that is powered by Google Cloud Retail AI? And Google and GroupBy are bringing the future of e-commerce to you by setting the standard for product discovery in the market. This Google Cloud Retail AI includes search and recommendations, personalization, merchandising, analytics, and data enrichment. And it helps you to leverage your online and in-store data through GroupBy to increase conversions and to reach your revenue goals. GroupBy powers some of the world's most highly converting retail and wholesale websites, such as Crate & Barrel, CVS Pharmacy, BJ's Wholesale, and Signet Jewelers. And on average, GroupBy's customers see a 40% increase in conversion rate.
So I want you to start empowering your customers today and scale your business today with GroupBy. You can get 2 months of implementation for free by going to groupbyinc.com/future-commerce today. That's groupbyinc.com/future-commerce. Yep, that's a mouthful. It is groupbyinc.com/future-commerce and get 2 months of implementation for free. Thanks to GroupBy for sponsoring this episode of Future Commerce. I'm a big fan of using the right tool for the right job. And I'm an even bigger fan of piloting and proving out a capability for your business before you go and throw a ton of money at it. And that's why I am a fan of our newest sponsor at Future Commerce, Wix eCommerce. Wix, the industry-leading content management platform, is now also a growing global e-commerce platform with advanced online storefront features. Solo creators, merch stores, limited releases, micro e-com sites, and oh so much more can be launched in under a day on Wix. Wix eCommerce lets you take control of your customer base and build repeat sales channels with integrated CRM and loyalty tools. You know, Wix might be the right tool for the right job for an entrepreneur, an omnichannel retailer, a brand to get up and run and launch and scale their online stores successfully. Why don't you give it a try? What have you got to lose? Go to wix.com/e-commerce today and join over 700,000 active stores already selling worldwide with Wix eCommerce. That's Wix, wix.com/e-commerce. This podcast is brought to you by Gorgeous, the e-commerce help desk that turns customer service into a profit center. I don't know if you've ever had an e-commerce experience like I just had, where my order shipped late, it took forever to arrive, and when it did, there were things missing, and the things that were in the box wasn't what I ordered. Nothing went right. So I reached out to the company to make it right, and every time I talked to them, I felt like I had to start over and have the same conversation again and again and again. I wish that they had been running Gorgeous. Gorgeous is the e-commerce help desk that helps turn customer service into one seamless conversation with your customer in every channel. It's powered by machine learning and automation, and it turns visitors into shoppers. It can unlock sales through live text, chat, social media, and increase your ad effectiveness by as much as the equivalent of 5% increase in ad spend. I would have had so much better of an experience in making what went wrong go right if the brand had been using Gorgeous. They combine all those communication channels like SMS and Instagram DMs, live chat, phone, and everything else all into one organized place, and then they integrate into your e-commerce store. If you're on Magento, BigCommerce, or Shopify, you're going to be able to quickly see customer data and order history and take action right from within your help desk. 7,000 customers, including Steve Madden, Princess Polly, Machine Layer, they all use Gorgeous, and I want to give you 2 months free. Get it today by going to gorgeous.com/future-commerce. That's gorgias.com/future-commerce and get 2 months free and make your customer service a little bit better with Gorgeous. Those are the hardest types of challenges to solve for, because I often said once upon a time in an e-com strategy role, there's nowhere else in the customer experience in digital where someone tells you in plain English what exactly it is they're looking for. But it's also nowhere else in the entirety of the customer journey where you can misinterpret what it is that they're asking for.
Absolutely. That's why the problem of search is so difficult and why so many people struggle with it, because it is very complex. Because you really have to understand user intent, but also buying behaviors and preferences. And you have to do that in milliseconds and calculate all those and bring that result back, because people expect search to be fast. They don't want to sit there and go get a cup of coffee and come back. It's got to be instantaneous. So to do it well and at speed and scale is quite difficult.
Philip is like freaking out inside a little bit right now. He had a whole talk on this a few years back, and I could just feel him being like, oh my gosh, yes.
I'm paying attention. We have this really handy tool now that tells us how much percentage of this show is me talking versus anyone else, and I'm trying to shut my mouth now.
I'm sure we can nerd out for hours on this stuff, because
for sure.
It's an exciting problem to solve, because when you get it right, the amount of positive feedback, and you look at your CSATs and all that sort of stuff that come off the site. And then the lack of, you know, board members reaching in or executives like, I did this search or my wife did this search and why doesn't it work? I have a plethora of emails that I always keep. It's kind of interesting that, you know, when you get it right, you hear nothing, but you get sales. And when you get it wrong, your phone rings off the hook. So high reward, high risk. But when you do get it right, magic things happen.
You have to wonder, though, too, where I think sometimes the it's the Henry Ford quote, which is, you know, overwrought to some degree. But it's the, you know, if I'd asked a customer what they wanted, they, you know, they'd tell me a faster horse. I think there's also a visionary
component. Well, it's a faster horse that eats less.
Well, that's true too, right? That's true too. And now we dig up dead dinosaurs to, you know, to feed different type of horse. That's a whole other story. But there's a problem in sort of the customer feedback loop and the way that, you know, product teams create product roadmaps. I think it's a really interesting parallel between running a SaaS business, right, that's in service of its customers, but also its customer's customer. Where you're trying to build out a, you know, a product roadmap to anticipate what customer expectations will be in the future. At the same time, I don't think enough e-commerce operators understand that their e-commerce store is also a product, and they don't manage it as such. They don't manage it as if it's a digital product. And I think that they lean a lot of times on, you know, third-party SaaS to solve those problems and sort of see around corners for them. What are your thoughts around that? Seeing as you're sitting in the driver's seat of one organization that's trying to solve this for your customer and your customer's customer.
So I'll preface it with the fact that I'm biased. So I'm giving you
opinion, right? We all are.
So my thing is, we've always, you know, our biggest competitor is actually not other SaaS offerings, right? And people will say that, like, they kind of look at you funny, like, wouldn't be your nearest competitor. I said, actually, we don't see them. What we see the most, especially in the places that we go, is the build versus buy problem still. There are IT organizations that think, okay, well, we'll get hire a bunch of developers, we'll get 100 developers or 200 developers. God, we've seen, you know, in the thousands and some of the larger players, and we can build our own better, right? So you have retailers trying to be technology companies or software development shops. And because they do work a website and there is technical piece of it, you can kind of see where the logic comes from. But the difference, like you said, is a platform is very broad. And the same things that plague the platform plays, right, the monoliths that have to do everything, they run into the exact same problem. But what has happened, especially with the move to the cloud, is finally, your friendly neighborhood CFO now is starting to weigh in on some of these capital spends and like, hey, if I can get off the shelf and I'm only paying for a piece of that development work, right, because they build once and then charge it out multiple times, why do I want to take 100% of that? And then, of course, they also build something that's not necessarily world-class. So if you spent all this money, and we've seen a lot of failed projects as well, and then you don't end up with the outcome that you want. And sometimes they'll take multiple kicks at that same can. With companies, the sort of best-of-breed approach and the SaaS approach is you get to look at the problems you're trying to solve. And there are amazing vendors, right? The whole eco-space right now is super exciting. We work alongside some of the most amazing technology companies from, we integrate with, same day delivery services or BOPIS, right? Buy online, pick up in store type vendors where we don't do that part of it, but we integrate with it to create that system. And I always think you should buy, right? That's my biased view. And the technology is moving at such a great pace and there's so much money coming into this market via, you know, venture capital and private equity. Amazing products are being built. That's way better than any retailer could build on their own. Whether it's in our segment or someone else's, I'm like, always buy off the shelf because there's an amazing, there's optionality. You can pick the one that's best to your needs and your time to market is going to be a fraction of what it would be trying to build it.
Composable commerce. that's the catchphrase of the decade for the 2020s. Brian, you were saying something.
I think it's really interesting. So this is one side of the coin. So you've got very big organizations that are like making the decision to build versus buy on one side of this coin. And they're like, okay, maybe we shouldn't build, because it's just way more efficient and way better to buy, because we're going to get more out of the box and we're not going to have to manage like the process of enterprise software, which is a process. And it requires a skill set that's in high demand. On the other side of the coin, we also sort of see this very like broad set, a lot of smaller brands that are kind of coming into the marketplace and kind of coming into their own now. And in the past, these smaller brands, they've typically come with smaller catalogs, and search has just not been a priority. But they're starting to grow up, and they're starting to add more catalog, or they're introducing a marketplace, and they're adding in other brands, and they're becoming a retailer or a marketplace on top of having their own stuff. And they're coming into the world of search now. And I know that you're kind of reaching like the top end of the market, but for the bottom end of the market, what advice do you have for those retailers about how they should think about decisions when they come, go to like make decisions around search, especially given that like we've all been saying, like,
I mean, discovery
platforms, platforms haven't done a very good job of like having their own search products. So yeah, that was a lot.
Yes, but so for us, the interesting thing is I my talk track is what we're trying to do as an organization is do a couple things. One is we want to democratize the technology. So one of the things that we have in the works is integration. So we're just about it's going out on the wire next week. We're going to be announcing a new version of our product that we co-built with Google in a very tight partnership with them.
Cool.
So actually I've said it now on your podcast like a week before it goes out, so I can't say too much about it, but it's a really exciting release. Imagining harnessing the power of YouTube, Google.com and Google Shopping, and all of the learnings from that, and packaging it up in an easy to consume group by platform. So that's a little teaser there. So that's where we're going with this thing, and really trying to not only serve the top of the market, right? So like obviously the big organizations, they can afford solutions. We're trying to actually come down market. And one of the things that we have in development right now is actually a one click. And you talk about marketplaces for Shopify. So Shopify is going to be our first partner that we allow the small retailers at a very reasonable monthly fee to have the same algorithm and machine learning capabilities from Groupbuy on their 1,000 products. So we really want to democratize it, like give everybody, including the mid-tier and lower tier that only may have 1,000 products or 10,000 products and do hundreds of thousands or millions a year, the same capability without having any IT involvement. So it's really going to, I think, change the landscape. So we're kind of excited about going, we traditionally would say down market, but it's a huge market. Shopify has got 1.45 million sites that are on their system. And a lot of them have had solutions that, are okay, like you said, good enough, but really couldn't, play with the sort of relevancy that you would get from a Google-like experience. And so we're really trying to democratize that and give everybody the same arrows in their quiver to go and win a market.
That, and it's funny because when you're thinking of e-commerce platforms, and folks are rattling off, the major players, Shopify is often said in the same sentence as, Salesforce and BigCommerce. And some others. And in reality, Shopify is at a scale that I think is quite unfathomable for the other platforms, especially like a Salesforce where, Shopify has 1.4, million and, Salesforce has, 1.257 million fewer. But that's a whole other conversation topic. I think the challenges that you solve in those at that scale, Brian, to your point, there's smaller catalogs for sure, but it doesn't mean that discovery isn't something they solve for. Maybe the tactic is different than, on-site search or natural language search. It's discovery in the top of the funnel rather than, mid-funnel, tactics to try to, increase AOV or increase propensity to purchase.
And Shopify has come a long way as a platform. When we first talked with Shopify, they were just thinking about Shopify Plus. So that's quite a few years back. Since they've launched that and they've gone to market, there are billion-dollar retailers that actually run off Shopify Plus. So that's why, of course, it's sort of like, you know, we obviously were at the top end. They were moving up through the ecosystems as they could scale their platform and add enterprise type capabilities. They've done a great job. Obviously, I'm a little biased again, being a Canadian and living in Toronto, and Shopify being a great Canadian success story. They've done a tremendous job. And that's why also they're a great partner to Google. We all kind of operate in this. So it's sort of a mixture that made sense for us with how great they've come up market. And the fact that we want to come down market at the same time. So it just seemed to make sense. And they're executing extremely well as an organization, very healthy, amazing growth rates, happy clients, which is what we want to have as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I think your timing is perfect. And as we talked about in our recent report, 9x9, it's not just Shopify maturing. It's not just Groupby, being ready to make this, this next plunge. It's the market. The market's ready. I think this is a perfect time to be introducing something like this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The maturity of the technology, again, with cloud and what that's brought us, and being able to, auto scale and use sophisticated machine learning models that do a lot of the human middleware that used to happen with these systems. It allows us to actually better service all parts of the market. And so, right, it is a maturity level that we're seeing in this current wave of technology that's coming out. And again, there has been some tailwinds, as we all know, with the rise of the sort of Shopify's or BigCommerce's and those kind of accessibility platforms to someone that traditionally doesn't have any IT staff, that just have some products they want to sell. But also, the advances for the larger tiers, that they don't want to have armies of people manually tuning systems, right? They want to focus on, selling product, not, again, being an IT team. So I think it's actually helped all parts of the market with this current wave and the COVID and the move to online. And for some time, that was the only way you could buy anything. So knowing that the entire market could go completely online was definitely a catalyst for companies making this easier for their customers.
I'm curious, shifting gears just a little bit, Roland, what your thoughts are around the consumer interaction piece. But you mentioned a good deal of, the other parts of what you're solving for is B2B interactions, one of which I think is listed as a part of your solution is ETL-centric, which it stands for Extract Transform Load. But it's something that, if you are a business that's integrating with so many different types of business interfaces, different pieces of the software suite. Again, composable commerce. Insert the jingle. Those are things that are very important for you to be able to fulfill. Parts of whether it's a dropship arrangement to a moving data between systems. In particular, OMS or ERP integrations. These are all things that, a B2B buyer is really concerned about. But there's other things that I think what's the buying center for that sort of a product? It's not likely somebody who's a small operator who's trying to solve for one, piece of functionality on the side. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say the smaller catalogs when you can... you have 1,000 products. It's a little different when we look at B2B. So you think about someone who maybe manufactures heavy machinery, right? So think about farm equipment or industrial supply, like Emotion Industries, part of Genuine Parts. They supply stuff to GM as well as even to Amazon for their automation systems, right? The rollers that all the boxes go down and all that sort of stuff, they supply that. There's some complexities in that because obviously Amazon, with how much they buy, is going to get a very different price than a small northern, manufacturer, right? That has one facility. So, you need to be able to, market to those different users dynamically, differently. There's other things that we support, like obviously, shipping is a big piece of it. So we actually pull in data to be able to calculate shipping. And what if you put two things into your cart, that one of them is hazmat and it can't go same day air, but you have other parts in it that can go, but hazmat needs to go 2 day ground, right? Having that metadata and that information, we have to like integrate in some of ours. We have maybe 15 or 20 different data sources. Other customers, even the B2C side, time of day pricing, right? So dynamically knowing, and Amazon's been doing, they make about 2.1 million, I think, data price changes a day on their products. And so based on the time of day, you actually have different buying behavior and are less likely or more likely to buy at a different price in the morning versus the evening. Being able to support that in the data model, you need that ETL capability to bring all that data together. Things like shop by store, right? So in a case of Bed Bath & Beyond, you can actually find or shop multiple stores to find a product because I want to pick it up on my way home for work. So I'm going to do the one that's on the highway on the way home versus the one closer to my house, things of that nature. That requires inventory by store for all the different stores that you have to be able to manipulate that data to only put the products that user can buy from that particular store. And same day delivery, which we support, right? So time of day pricing, same day delivery, BOPIS, all of these things require data from different systems, right? So you have inventory systems and picking systems and availability. You have a pricing team that works on what does the price need to be at 9 o'clock versus 9 p.m. Mm. All of that comes from different places, right? In a small 1,000, product thing, they don't have that same problem. But through our platform and through that ETL layer, we're able to easily ingest that data. We can actually pull it from enterprise, a SOAP request or an enterprise bus and pull that from the systems. We can have the data pushed to us. It can be in multiple file formats, right? This system puts it out in a comma separated file. Another one, maybe it's tab delimited. Maybe it's, we got to query a database. It's a SQL statement with an object coming back. So you have to support whatever way the data is formatted and how to access it. And it's very, very easy, right? So we need to get time to market very, very fast. And then as new systems come on board, we need to be able to adjust them. And so that gives people speed and time to market and then less complexity. Again, the promise of SaaS is that you do a lot less work. And so that's always our goal, is to build systems that make, that A, delight our clients and help them increase revenue and decrease cost.
I'm going to ask you a meta question, and you are free to strike this from the record. But I'm curious, as you move, as parts of the product suite move into enterprise SaaS territory, the pricing model also has tended to trend towards the enterprise sales type pricing scenario. Whereas the rest of the ecosystem has moved to sort of either a transparent fixed price pricing model or a percentage of revenue. And I think that like this disparate means of pricing for various parts of your infrastructure actually leads to lack of adoption for otherwise good medicine that a brand might take to have a system in place that's purpose built to do a specific thing. Mm-hmm. But there's this like complexity in the way that you manage your business operations, because these things are effectively cost centers. So the big meta question here is there a strategy in a suite of solutions like yours that can bring the things that are profit centers, like, on-site search, packaged together with things that are typically, operational cost centers, in a way that allows you to take a bitter pill with one that, otherwise will deliver also on incrementality. And if you need me to further refine the question, I can, but I think I said what I was trying to say. Like, is there something natural in the way that you're pairing both the front end and back end solution so that the pricing works itself out, so that you have a fuller suite of solutions, so you're not just focused only on driving revenue, but you're also focused on driving operational efficiency?
So for us, and I wouldn't, and the thing too is SaaS has different models. It sure is complex. I think it's actually very difficult for retailers sometimes to understand it. And some of the more sophisticated ones understand. So everybody kind of lumps, if it's in the cloud, as just the word SaaS, which in the most of the time it's not, right? There's still services and implementation costs and all that sort of stuff. It's not truly a what SaaS I think was meant to be in the early days when it was defined. But there was also like PaaS, right? P-A-A-S, which is platform as a service, which still allows you to do, you know, configurations and usually enough to hurt yourself and design systems that are not really totally taking advantage of the cloud. They're more cloud enabled versus cloud native. We always went to the cloud native stuff. We were very early adopters of containers, like Dockerizations, Kubernetes when it was before it was actually put in the cloud by Google and managed as a managed service, because we wanted to fully take advantage of the cloud service and really meet the promise of SaaS. And in a true manner is that most SaaS's essentially should be either a fixed price for the service or a metered service. In other words, it's like going to the gas station, right? If I need to go 1,000 kilometers, you know I need so many liters in the tank to do that. And if I've got to go double that, it's double. And then it's a very predictable model. So either it's fixed, it's X number of dollars per month, and I don't need to worry about it, or it's based on my current usage and then growth. And hopefully if these systems do their jobs, it will naturally grow. So you will pay more, but both your top line and your profitability is going up. And for group buy, we don't actually focus. A lot of people, especially with things like search, will just focus on conversion percent. And it kind of is actually too narrow of a focus in the way that you need to think about it. Because we care about things like gross margin and margin dollar contribution. We think about your average order value.
Yeah.
We think about holistically the health of the business, and our dashboards and everything reflect that. And that allows us to work on the health of the organization and what they're trying to achieve and keep the CFO happy while also making, you know, the VP of marketing or chief digital officer also meeting their goals. And so I think you have to have that wide health of the business approach and go for something that is truly SaaS.
It's incredible. What a way we've come around here, talking about Endeck at the beginning and now look where we are. What's next? That's what I want to hear about.
That's the big question.
Where is the future of product discovery and the future of search headed?
So I think it's pretty exciting. We're still not at the promised land. So we're working really hard to get there, that we really want to blur the line that the user experience when we think about digital also includes the stores. Obviously if you're a digital only business, okay, it's digital only, but a lot of our organizations that we support obviously have physical locations. And so really blending it so that the user can really have, and I know we've used omnichannel a lot, but I don't think we've really got to that point. We're just starting to like edge into it properly. But the idea, like obviously we talk about like BOPIS and same day delivery, which is great. The mobile apps being in-store apps as well. We've done a lot of things like Bed Bath & Beyond, the tablets and stuff that the employees use in the store to help their clients. That's powered by our system. The scanner, by the way, when you do gift registry, also powered by our system. So traditionally people go, oh, I didn't even think about group buy when we think about gift registry, in-store, representative apps. The online, obviously, and the mobile apps make sense. But think about when you come into a store, being able to have a virtual or augmented reality where I can just say, I'm looking for this product. And you just, your camera comes on and there's a blue dotted line that you follow and you just follow it through the store and you'll find that product. Or being able to put your phone up to a particular product and all its metadata, dynamically shows around it in a sort of tag cloud with all the different attributes and information so that you don't have to read the tiny little print on the back of the Advil bottle or something like that at CVS. So really the blurring of the line is sort of that next thing where it just becomes intuitive that I don't actually know or notice the difference between in-store and online. It becomes true to that click and mortar business. And it just becomes intuitive to use. It sort of just happens for me. And that's where I think we're going collectively as an industry, is to remove all the friction between in-store and online and really delight the clients with, discovery of products that are available, not just meeting my shopping list.
I think you're right. I think that in-store is the next frontier for digital. And I think another side of this is metrics as well. Like as we develop out the in-store experience and like you said, like that mobile app becomes sort of in-store, gateway as well. I think the opportunity to optimize for shoppers and make that experience seamless is still, there's still so much room. There's so much room. Like there's a lot of opportunity to make their online experience, their mobile experience, just like when they go in store, this just feels like, you know, another part of that. And being able to find things and discover new things and then being able to optimize for people personally, and adding that component of personalization, I think you're absolutely dead on. So I'm excited. I'm excited about where this is going. Search has been around for a long time. Where we're headed next is just, I think you absolutely call it out. It's not search. It's beyond search.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's other things like virtual merchandisers, really leveraging your data. Also understanding what is the impact. A lot of people say some of the reporting and analytics that we're doing, the big data side of it in the new platform is, understanding user behavior across different parts. So I may have done all my research online and tying that to the in-store transaction and be able to report that back to the user. So, a lot of times digital will struggle with what is their actual contribution to revenue, right? So the easy one is just to add up every time I buy something online and then get the total. But people are influenced a lot by social as well as their friends. I think something like 75% of people will actually check with their friends if they've had an experience with that product or brand. So that's very influential, and they're doing a lot of research prior to buying a product. And not just, by the way, price is no longer actually one of the largest drivers to acquiring it, and really understanding that the ease of use of a system and of access to a brand is actually outweighing price. So I think there's a huge opportunity there, but it's going to be a brave new world that some of this tech that's going to be introduced is going to fundamentally change the way people think about brands.
Where do you think there's an arbitrage opportunity at the moment? I think a lot of the truisms that we see kind of bandied about as best practice are actually things that are kind of table stakes that everybody should be doing, and they don't actually drive a ton of growth. Where are the areas of underinvestment that a merchant could be a standout in customer experience that very few are investing in the moment?
Oh, that's a really good question. We have some clients that have done some really amazing things. So one of the largest jewelry companies in North America, at least maybe not even the world, is Signet Jewelers. So you would know them as Kay's and Jared, and People's Jewelers. They're a client of ours. They're doing some spectacular things. I just was at Retail X with Jane Lilly, who is their senior vice president of digital there, and amazing person. And she's done some great things where, if you think about it, these are fairly large priced purchases, right? So it's a little different and very personalized, right? You think about an engagement ring or an anniversary gift or whatever that may be. And obviously with COVID happening, they implemented some amazing things to where you could digitally try on the ring and see it on your own hand. Figure out your size, all that sort of stuff. And really, I think the next thing is to create sort of a virtual store experience online. And there's a lot of interesting tech, and this is stuff that we may power from a data perspective. This is not an area that we focus on. But I think that the one area is sort of creating that virtual assistant technology. And I'm not just talking about chatbots, but being able to try things on, see them on you, sort of that augmented reality type stuff, is probably an area that a ton of brands could. And some, we've seen some amazing stuff like and I'm trying to think, was it Macy's or something? I may get the retailer wrong, but one of the big ones had a wall in the things where you could actually virtually try on stuff in store, right? So I think that kind of more leading edge tech is going to become more mainstream. It's going to need some great data and imagery to probably do some of those. But I think that's probably the one I would say is kind of underinvested in, that we see some lot of potential in, right? That sort of augmented reality and store walkthrough. It looks at my whole shopping list that I put together and it'll walk me in the right order through the store. I don't know if I'm an awful grocery shopper. I would go up and down the same aisle six times.
Really, I do that for fun, though. That's fun.
That's Brian's default state. We've talked about that ad nauseum.
Just don't do it while you're hungry. That can be very dangerous.
Oh, it's so bad.
Oh, yeah. I'm all in on that.
For sure.
I think you're right. I do think there's a lot of assistive tech for optimizing, whether that's optimizing for like the shortest path to purchase. So there's a convenience aspect, like you mentioned there, Roland. I love this idea of optimizing for just a heightened experience without having to, drag your rear end into a jewelry store. Although I do think that there's something really powerful that's happening in that this technology is becoming much more pervasive, and so hopefully we'll see more more of these especially highly considered purchases take advantage of that type of technology. And if that happens, you'll be sure to hear about it on Future Commerce here. Thank you so much for your time, Roland. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, and we thank you for your partnership here this year. It's been wonderful to have you along. Where can people find out more about GroupBuy?
Quite simply, www.groupbuyinc.com. And you'll get to read and lots of good content to download, as well as contact us type of usual forms on our types of website.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Future Commerce. You can find more episodes of this podcast at futurecommerce.fm or anywhere where podcasts are found. And if you want to learn a little bit more about maybe even one or two of the brands that were mentioned here on this show, we have a brand new consumer trends report, brands trends report that just came out. It's called 9x9. It's the 9 trends that you need to know about and 9 brands rated a piece of those that are standouts. Businesses, these companies, brands that are changing the way that we shop online. And because I believe that commerce touches everybody, that means that they're changing the way that we all interact as people and maybe changing the world too. As a result, you can get the 9x9 report at 9x9.report. And that'll be a great thing for you to read here in the next couple of weeks as we get into some more deep content about how those changes are impacting every single one of us. That's it. Thank you so much for listening to Future Commerce.